Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Imagine a year where some of the most iconic comic book characters are brought to life on the big screen.
The Garfield movie's not out yet, Zach. We can't review that
yet. Not Garfield. Oh. Asterix and Obelix.
Oh!
It's 1976. Oh my goodness. Ah, those teleports never get any easier. Oh my goodness. Where am I now? It's like an open field. There's some trees. Oh, a wild boar just squealed by. Whoa! Oh my god! It's a centurion. He's chasing after me. Oh god. I've got to cartoonishly run by starting to run and spinning my legs around in a circle before actually going really quickly. Oh, they appear to have tripped over and collapsed.
Why, hello there.
What?
Young man.
Who are you?
You seem to have run your way into my forest.
Hello, weird forest creature.
Yes. Would you like some potion?
Potion?
Look at this potion.
Well, this doesn't seem suspicious at all. I'll take some of your potion. Yeah, sure.
Well, you can't have any.
What? But you just offered some.
Someone told me you fell into the potion as a baby, and so you can't have any.
That's Obelix. I'm not Obelix.
Oh, well, could have fooled me.
Whoa, wait a second. All right, you little, now you're going to get some.
Oh, no.
I'm going to beat the crap out of this stupid forest gremlin for calling me fat.
Zach, it's me.
Oh, it's you, Sandro. Oh,
it was just a prank. It was just a prank.
That makes sense. I wondered why the forest gremlin was calling me fat. Of course it's Sandro.
It's me, and I call you that all the time.
It's true. You're like, hey, Zach, how's the fat going? And I'm like, what? What does that even mean?
I'm like, you aren't even. Anyway.
It's all those wild boars, you know, they really get to me.
Welcome to Oldie But a Goodie. Today we're talking about the 12 tasks of Asterix.
Whoa! Asterix and Obelix, one of my all-time favorite comic book series from when I was a child.
Yeah, me too.
It's good.
The movie or the comics?
Yes. I would say both.
I would agree with you.
There you go.
We're going to do non-spoilers and then spoilers. But let's talk about the comic first, because we both read a lot of it.
Well, I was a big fan as a kid, going to the old Sunbury Library.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
I was watching the old Transformers cartoons, reading a bit of them Garfield comics.
Oh, yeah, Garfield.
A bit of Tintin.
Oh, yeah.
Some other comics, I'm sure. And Asterix and Obelix.
Yeah.
Oh, and listening to audiobooks. I remember they got these little audiobook, like, almost MP3 players, but they just had the one.
I remember those.
They were just, like, singular book things, and so you would check them out, and you could listen to them. You could plug your headphones into, like, just essentially an MP3 player, but it would only play the one thing.
Yeah.
And it was great.
I remember those. I think I read the 39 clues on those, the
Ooh.
Whole series. They were pretty good. I liked them.
My favorite was Hiccup Horrendous Haddock III, How to Train Your Dragon.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
With all the fart jokes in those books.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The books are far more childish and rude than the actual DreamWorks, like, movies. But they were read by David Tennant. So as a child, I never knew that that was David Tennant. And I only learnt it later on. And I was like, wait a minute. David Tennant read to me one of my favorite audiobooks as a child?
That's pretty cool.
What?
That's pretty cool.
And he's also my favorite doctor because he's the best one.
That's, he's the worst. Well, it's complicated. But anyway, there were no audiobooks for Asterix, unfortunately.
True.
But there were movies.
Yeah.
And I think I've seen this one before, actually. About halfway through, there was a random point where someone hypnotizes a man into thinking he's a bird.
Mm-hmm.
And I remembered that visual so well that that was when I went, oh, I have seen this before.
Because yeah.
Everything
oh, okay.
before that, I was like, this feels familiar. I think I've seen this.
Oh, interesting. I can tell you I have never seen this before. I've never seen this before. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it was like on television at some point, right? You know?
Yeah, I don't know how I would have seen it.
Hey, maybe it was at the local library and you watched it, you know, took it out, got a VHS tape and
maybe.
Watched that bad boy.
I mean, this one is considered to be one of the better Asterix movies.
I would say so.
At least in terms of the animated ones. There's a fair few of them.
I haven't seen any of the animated ones, but I did recently watch about half of the new Netflix live-action Asterix and Obelix.
Now, there's a lot of live-action Asterix movies, and I've never seen any of them because I can't picture those characters as people.
Yeah.
So, how was that experience?
It was okay. They spent a lot of money on, like, special effects.
Right.
To make it extra cartoony in real life. So, like, imagine Harry Potter when, you know, they cast spells on each other and they're, like, their face contorts in a weird way.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of an example. Like when in Harry Potter, when they're eating random sweets that make them roar and other things like that.
Mm, yeah.
Like, imagine that sort of sound effects, like, they drink the potion and, like, lightning shoots out. It's pretty cool. Visually,
okay.
Very nice looking.
That's cool.
The story and English voice acting are not great, to be
Why
honest.
Why did you watch it in English?
Look, that was the default when I opened it. I was like, I wonder if it will be just French or will it give me the English dub? I thought it would also be funnier. but English translation did not do it much credit. It was a bit rough. I think it's probably a lot better in French. Like, they have a gag at the start. And so this is spoilers for the Netflix.
Yeah, it's spoilers for Asterix and Obelix, the Middle Kingdom, where they go to China.
Yeah, this is just the start. But the starting gag is like, Asterix is like, maybe we shouldn't eat boars so often. You know, maybe we should, like, diversify it up and add some vegetables. And Obelix is like, vegetables? Asterix, you're too funny. You're too funny. Which is your typical Asterix and Obelix sort of conversation, right? But it's played off. It feels like Asterix is very sincere. And it's like, what the fuck? You need to stop fucking eating boars.
Right.
And Obelix is like, what are you talking about? And it's just like, the joke isn't played up enough, I feel, you know what I mean?
It's got a good cast, though, like, there's pretty
popular
people in this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Again, visually really good looking, and like, the actors seem pretty good. Just like, I don't know, the story's a bit rough, because they're doing this thing where they go to China. Maybe better in the French version, I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. I think, like, with Asterix, it's better as a comic.
Yes.
Its best form is always going to be a comic because,
yeah,
like, as characters, I just don't see them as moving people.
No.
I never have seen them as move because they're not real. Everything's a caricature, and then to see it moving, it's like, with the exception of this movie, I'm like, I don't know. I don't like seeing Asterix have a voice. I like to picture what that voice is. I don't like to hear a voice.
Yeah. Going away from the Netflix edition onto the old 1976 12 Tasks of Asterix, Sandro, you watched the French version, correct?
Of 12 Tasks? I did watch the French version, yes.
I watched the English version.
Oh, you managed to find it.
Yeah, I did, indeed. So I have, in fact, watched the English version, and I think the English voice acting for it was really good.
Was it?
Yeah.
Huh.
It was pretty good. It's like, Obelix talks like this. This is how he talks. Like, that's the only thing.
Right.
And he complains and whines, like, how I would think Obelix would whine. He's like, oh, I could use some more balls. I'm getting hungry.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. See, like, when I hear that voice for Obelix, I'm like, it makes sense.
I think that's, yeah. I think there's definitely a point that a TV show can never get what you think those characters...
Well, not all the time. Like, I think the Tintin TV show was pretty spot on.
Yeah.
But that could just be a case of, like, as a kid, I read Asterix and never watched it. Whereas with Tintin, I read and watched it. So yeah, I'm used to both of those. That could be the case. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's like, you might need some adjusting. But
maybe.
The English voice acting for Asterix and Obelix was quite good in the 1976 version.
The French voice acting was pretty good as well. Like, across the board, it was really solid.
I think Asterix just works better in French, I feel. Like, he is a Frenchman in my mind.
I think Obelix works in English, though. I also, on top of, I watched the trailer for the movie that you saw, and I went, I'm not watching that. I also watched the trailer for Asterix, The Mansion of the Gods, which is from about 10 years ago. It's the first 3D animated Asterix movie. It actually looks pretty good. There's a lot of weird, like, modern music and modern references in it. But aside from that, the voices, particularly for Obelix, were pretty spot on. Like, the chief guy's like, everyone's had their magic potion, woo! And then just, like, in the background, Obelix is like, not me. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the French cast for what I saw were pretty solid. They were all quite good.
How was it? You had subtitles, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. How was the French version, watching the subtitles? And
it was good. The translation was a bit rough at times. There were random, like, grammatical errors and stuff.
Oh, okay.
It seemed like a pretty quick translation.
Yeah. Well, it's quite an old movie, right?
Yeah.
So that would check out. It's probably like an auto-translated subtitles or something.
But, no, I thought it was pretty good. I liked a lot of the voices. I just don't really imagine these characters with voices a lot of the time. But, it worked. It worked pretty well.
I'll say so. Some of the characters are literally have, like, one gag, and that's their character.
Yeah.
And they do that one gag, and I was like, hey, that's their one gag. Oh, they only had one thing. Oh, man. I forgot about that.
And that's kind of my thing with 12 Tasks of Asterix, and I think any Asterix movie, is I love the comics, but with a comic, you can take breaks. There's obvious points and, like, chapters to stop and pause. With a movie, you've got to sit in this story for an hour and a half.
Mm.
And I found the 12 Tasks of Asterix, while pretty good, and I enjoyed it, I did find it to get... It got a little bit grating after about 45 minutes.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I just got a little bit sick of it.
I didn't have that, but maybe that's because I had the English version, right? So it
maybe.
Was very easy to, like, zone in and out, you know, because I could just let it wash over me.
Maybe. And I think as well, particularly with this story, and we'll get to the story later, but it's basically just a bunch of sketches.
Yeah.
It's not really an adventure per se.
I disagree.
It is and isn't. Like, it's a bunch of tasks. I feel like it's like the Holy Grail sort of movie. It's just a bunch of connected sketches.
And I would describe that as an adventure. The Holy Grail, that was an adventure.
I guess. But it's not like I mean, to point to other Asterix movies that they have adapted, like Asterix and Cleopatra, that's very much a you go here to do this thing sort of movie.
Yeah.
Whereas this one is like, you go here and do this. That's 5 minutes. Now go do this. This one's a bit of a longer sketch. Now this.
This sounds like 12 different adventures. You got 12 for the price of one, Sandro.
You are correct there. This is true.
But yes,
true.
This is a this is like a sketch sort of thing. But I am totally biased, I will have to say, because I think I've read the comic adaptation of this movie.
Oh yeah, we should mention that. This is the first Asterix movie to ever not be based on a comic book. This was an original made for the movie.
Really? Because it really does feel like an Asterix and Obelix comic being brought to...
I'm pretty sure it's written by the guys who wrote Asterix. Let me see.
I'm just saying they did really well translating it to film because it feels like a comic because it doesn't forget about anything. We see all the iconic characters. We see like the old man that's like, ooh, a sexy woman.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, they keep all of the jokes in there. Like the intro, because every comic starts and ends the same way with the same like scene and whatever.
Yeah, and with Cacophonix getting the shit beaten out of him.
Yeah, exactly. Fuck that little. Fuck that. Fuck that bard.
How is the audio for Cacophonix for you?
I don't remember him saying anything. I think it was like, oh.
No, he didn't say anything. He just, on my thing, it went strum. It went like strum, strum, and he went, oh.
Oh, yeah. No, yes. No, he did start to sing, and it was quite awful.
Yeah, it was great.
But yeah, no, I think they did a really good job at making an Asterix movie, particularly with a lot of jokes about this being a movie.
It
was really fun as well.
True.
That was good. And a lot of breaking of the fourth wall constantly throughout this movie.
But I feel like that's like most of Asterix and Obelix. They were very fourth wall breaky.
Yeah, for sure. We should probably mention what Asterix is as well, because I think there's probably some people who are listening who have no idea.
Probably should have mentioned that like 20 minutes ago.
Probably should have. What is Asterix? Well, Asterix is about... In many ways, it's a piece of historical fiction.
Yes. So the Gauls are these like barbarian people.
They are the Celts. The Celts.
Yeah.
In Europe.
But Julius Caesar, with his Roman legions, has conquered all the land.
Yes.
Except for one small village.
Yeah, one little tiny village, and that village is filled with bearded men who drink the potions and they can fight an entire army by themselves.
Yeah, they have the druid. Oh, what's the druid's name?
I don't remember what the druid's name is.
Getafix. which is just a great name. Yep. Getafix. Oh, the names are amazing. So Getafix, he gives them this magic potion that allows them to essentially be invincible gods, where they can't lose. And so, yeah, the men and women drink from the potion, and it's great. They go beat up Romans. They love beating up Romans. It's one of their favorite things. And so when Romans roll up, they fight each other to get the chance to fight the Romans.
Yes.
Which is a classic, you know.
And in fighting each other, they usually manage to beat all the Romans as well.
Yeah. It's great. And we'll see that later on in this film.
Yeah. And there's heaps of characters. But that's pretty much the general premise of this.
I'm going to go through them quickly. We've got Vital Statistics.
Yep.
Which is their chieftain. We've got one of my favorite characters, Dogmatix. He's a little dog.
Oh, yes, and I do have something to bring up with Dogmatix, Zach.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Dogmatix or Snowy?
Oh.
Yeah.
Dogmatix for me.
Mm.
It was always Dogmatix for me. Look, Tintin's cool and all.
Tintin, that 30-year-old teenager.
Yeah.
He's so cool.
Yeah, that bald 30-year-old teenager. I don't think he's bald.
I will go for Snowy then. I will go for Snowy because Snowy's a bit smarter. That doesn't mean anything.
No. I feel like, to be fair, I think he has a bigger role in Tintin. Like, he actually does things a lot of the time, whereas Dogmatix is just kind of there sometimes. You know what I mean?
Sometimes there's Dogmatix adventures, but they're pretty rare.
They're pretty rare
and far between, yeah.
Yeah. But it's more like he drinks the potion and then he beats up some, like, big dogs, you know?
That's true.
There for the gags. He's not there for... But, like, Dogmatix is my favorite. He will always be my favorite. Unhygienix.
Who's unhygienic?
Oh, he's the fish
the
seller.
Fishmonger.
He's the fishmonger. Independema is the chieftain's wife. Geriatrics is the old man.
The old guy. Yep.
Oh, man, these names are incredible.
I like the name of the smith, which is Fully Automatics.
Yeah, Fully Automatics.
And then his dad, Semi-Automatics.
Yep. That's a good one.
There's heaps of characters, and then there's just random adventures, which usually Julius Caesar challenging them to something, and then they go and do it, and then they have to fight Julius Caesar at the end.
There's Just for Kicks.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
Yeah. That's like a young character.
Yeah.
He's there just for kicks, yeah. Okay, this is good. The naming is iconic.
And yeah, I think it's a pretty good movie. I think it's not too long, but I felt it dragged a little bit, but I think that's just personally because I prefer a full adventure, but I still think that, you know, I used to like the Looney Tunes growing up, and this is just one really long collection of small little Looney Tunes, basically, small little cartoons.
I wonder if, and it might be a bit much, but like, if you watch the English version, whether that would be less laborious, because you have to, like, because when you're watching a dub, you have to kind of concentrate, you know?
That's true. That's a good point.
On the things and other things, where I feel like the English version, I was very relaxed watching it, you know? My mind could wander and I could just kind of zone out and enjoy the adventure, you know?
Yeah. I know what you mean. Maybe, potentially. I don't know. I might have to go back and watch some of the other animated ones, or some of the newer ones as well. Maybe.
True, yeah. That would be fun.
But Zach, before we rate it, we've talked a lot of positive things about this movie. Some negative things about the Asterix comics in general. Are they racist?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Sort of. They definitely, it's from a different time, you know?
It's from a different time.
They have not aged particularly well.
For sure. Here's the thing with Asterix, though. And I'm not saying that this gives it a free pass, but every single country they go to, every single sort of people they show, it's always the same caricature. It's the stereotypes for every single, even the Gauls, they are caricatures.
Yeah.
Does that mean that it's racist towards everyone? No, because it hits a little harder when it's, yeah, like a Native American or
The like Native American depictions and like, I don't think they were in this one, but like, I think in the Egyptian comic, the Cleopatra gets carried around by like slaves.
Yeah. Oh, there was a random moment where someone was being carried around by slaves in this one as well, and it was
So it's definitely like if it was made today, they would take that out. Obviously,
you would think that, wouldn't you?
I would think so.
Well, in 1994, they made Asterix Conquers America, and they left it all in. But that was also, you know, 30 years ago, so who knows?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Is that based off a comic, or is it a...
That one's based off a comic, yeah.
Yeah. There you go. So, like, there's definitely a bit of racism. A little bit of racism, but
it's
like,
mainly in the art style too. Like, it's pretty much just how it's drawn.
Not necessarily the writing or anything. Yeah,
no, it's not necessarily like a big downer on this movie. I'm not sure about the comics, but yeah, it's one of those just like early cartoons. Every single early cartoon that ever existed, you got to take this with a grain of salt. You got to be like, You gotta understand when this was made, basically. And you've also gotta understand that the French are the worst and they're all racist, so...
Any problems
with this reflects on the French, and that's fine.
It's the French's fault. Absolutely.
But I don't think it takes away too much from this movie. Maybe some of the comics. There's probably one or two here or there where they go to, like, America or whatever, and you're like, what?
Yeah.
Or the one where there's aliens. Did you ever read that one?
No, I don't think so.
Asterix and the Falling Sky, which was the last one the original writer ever wrote, and there's aliens in it.
Why? Falling Sky. That makes sense. That's the only thing they fear. Well, let us jump out of spoilers. I'm going to rate it goody.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely has aged a bit poorly over the last 50-ish years, you know, with certain bits. But I feel like, aside from those moments, you know, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it a lot. I enjoyed most of the gags. I liked the characters. I liked the 12 tasks that they do. I think they were pretty fun. And, yeah, it's one of my favorite comics as a kid, so I gotta give the animated show credit where I was like, you know what, I think this was just as good.
Yeah, I agree. I'm gonna give it a goodie as well.
Yeah.
I think it was fun, it was nostalgic, it was great to see this again, makes me want to read them again.
Mm.
I think with this movie, I got a little bit tired of it after a little bit of time, but also I think I just needed a break, but also... I think out of all the Asterix movies, this one was made particularly to be a movie.
Yeah.
So therefore, it's got all of the jokes in it about being a movie, which maybe makes it the best Asterix movie. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's good.
It's definitely a goodie for me as well. So two goodies.
It does make me want to check out the other ones and see if the ones based on a comic book are slightly worse.
Mm, me too.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Sally McSeller, and as an American, I love when horror franchises come to my hometown of New York City. And oh boy, is that what the Friday the 13th franchise did? Yes, yes it is. In Jason Takes Manhattan, which is number 8, and Sandro and Zach from Oldie But a Goodie have gone and bloody reviewed it. Why did I say bloody? I'm an American. Anyway, here's a clip for your ear holes. They all escape the boat. They get in a life raft. They go to New York. And Jason, he follows them the whole way. Now, Zach, do you think that Jason swam or did he walk across the bottom of the ocean like Pirates of the Caribbean?
I imagine he had like a boat above him and he's doing the exact scene from Pirates of the Caribbean where he like walked underwater but with a boat for oxygen
on top of him. Yes.
While yes, Jason doesn't spend that much time in New York in the movie Jason Takes Manhattan, I do have to say that there is some good New York action in there, and the boys really did a damn good job reviewing it. And you can get that episode over at patreon.com/oldiebutagoodiepod with one bonus episode a month and all the ad-free episodes of the main show that you can swing your American-loving hat at. That's right. I'm an American, and I'm from New York. Lore drop. Woohoo!
Alright, spoiler alert, spoiler alert.
Spoiler.
Bloody, blah, blah, blah.
Spoiler, spoiler, spoiler.
Spoiler, watch out. We're doing some spoilers.
How does it open, Sandra?
It opens with all the exposition that you need at the start of an Asterix and Obelisk comic.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And it's funny, the Netflix version really quickly ran through the opening intro.
Okay.
Where it's got, like, Rome and then Gaul and then you're there. Whereas I felt this one gave it a little bit more gravitas. I particularly like the English narrator was very calm. He was very calm. I don't know about the French one.
I don't remember. I liked the voice. I don't remember it super well, but I liked it.
Mine was like, in Rome, there's Julius Caesar. He conquered all the nations.
You had David Attenborough as your narrator?
No, not quite. Without the heavy British accent.
Ah, yes.
Without that. It was, you know, very calm sort of thing. And it's like, but there was one village that, you know, like your typical British calm thing. Like a radio announcement, almost.
Yeah.
But there was one village that stood up to the Romans.
And I liked all of the jokes right off the bat that were about the movie. Because it, like, we open and there's just, like, random... your modern day trash in the middle of the forest.
Oh, yeah. And it's
that
like,
the animator has to remove.
Back in BC, it's like, not in modern times, and then it vanishes. And
That was good.
The narrator, like, coughs, and it's like, it's not modern times, so all the trash disappears, which is, yeah.
I like as well where the narrator was like, and that is the village. Now, you're all familiar with these characters, so I won't do any introductions, right? Anyone here new? And then we just see a bunch of, like, actual hands to stick their hands out like you're in a theater.
Yeah.
Who need the introductions? That was pretty funny.
Which is a great gag.
Yep.
Great sort of opening gag sort of thing. The Netflix version just jumped you straight into it.
Yeah.
So I feel like it was missing some of those gags.
I agree. And that was a pretty Mel Brooks sort of joke as well.
Yeah.
Breaking that fourth wall, which was good. I liked and then instantly disliked and then went back to liking the joke where they introduce you to Asterix and he says hello to you in every language.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I liked it until the Japanese hello.
That was a little bit of racism right there. That was funny.
I was gonna
point that out. It's like, yeah, it's like, oh, it's all good up until the point where it's suddenly very racist for a second and then keeps going.
And he only does it for Japan. He doesn't do it for any other country. He only does that for Japan. And I'm like, oh boy.
I liked it in my version, the French one. What was the French one for you? Was it just hello?
Oh, no. He just winks.
Yeah.
He doesn't say anything. He just, like, winks at the screen.
For our one, he made a noise when he did the French one and then winked. And then that was very funny.
That is pretty funny. Because Asterix also hates the French, even though he is drawn by the French.
Yeah. No. In the English one, he was like, haha, the French. And I was like, what? Oh, that's funny. He made fun of the French.
I remember I was reading an Asterix comic once, and one of my parents' friends came up to me and was like, Asterix, I freaking love Asterix. You should try reading the original one without it being translated. And I was like, why would I do that?
Why would you do that? I am 10. I don't even know what the French are.
It's like, why would you tell me that? Why would I do that? And then that guy actually moved to France for a couple of years. So of course he said that.
Yeah.
Julius Caesar is like, we can't take over this small village. They must be gods.
The small Gaul. The smally Gaulies.
The Gaul of these Gauls.
The Gaul of these Gauls to be so smalls yet still be Gauls.
Exactly. We need to take over them, but we can't. They must be gods. How do you defeat gods? You do Hercules tasks.
We do see them do their classic fight with some Roman legionnaires.
Of course.
And the I love in every comic book, the Romans are like, we should just not fight them. We always lose and get our shit beaten in. But then the commanders are like, yeah, but we have orders, so
we gotta
maybe
do it,
it'll
I guess.
Be different this time, you know? Yeah. And then they get beaten the shit out of. And then, yeah, the, like, Roman legionnaire comes back to Caesar and he's like, they must be gods. They literally can't lose.
And Julius Caesar is like, all right, we will challenge them to a challenge, obviously. We will make them do 12 tasks just like Hercules did. And I hate to bring this up again. We did do the Hercules movie. I hate to bring it up again, but we cut to an animation explaining all of the tasks that Hercules had done. And now Julius Caesar is Roman. So all of the gods and everything in the Asterix world are Roman because that just, you know, like makes sense with the time and the setting.
Yep.
But they're all drawn like they're Greek. The animated exposition for Hercules, the art style is Greek. They introduce a Roman, like, Olympian at one point, I think. He's wearing Greek clothing. If this is self-aware, that's hilarious.
Yeah. Well, Sandro, I don't know if you know, but actually the Romans conquered a lot of area with Greeks and Greek mythology, and they just kind of stole it because they're dicks.
That's true. But they repurposed a lot. Like, they kind of came up with their own art style. Like, Roman has its own look to Greek.
That's true. Rome was a lot more multicultural. You are right.
Yes.
But I feel like you are onto something there where there's a lot of culture blending happening going on.
I think it's on purpose.
But I feel like it's appropriate for Rome that it's just a blend of cultural blah, you know?
Yeah. I loved the joke where Julius Caesar sees someone playing with their knife. And he's like, Bruto, stop playing with that knife. You'll end up hurting someone. Which is funny, because that's the guy who stabs Julius Caesar.
Yeah.
That
was a good little joke there, yeah.
I liked that a lot. That was pretty funny.
So, Julius Caesar, he brings these 12 tasks. But of course, they mentioned the original 12 tasks, which involves Hercules killing a lot of, like, random mythical beings.
Yes.
Which, obviously, if Hercules killed them, they can't do that.
No.
So he's like, but we won't make you do these ones. We've come up with 12 new ones for you to do. And I was like, ah, mm-hmm. okay. Yeah, this is good. I like it. I like it. And then they... Julius gives them, like, some little dude to keep track of...
Yeah, what was his name?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Caius Tidlius.
Yes, good old Tidlius.
Who, in both the French and the English, is voiced by the same guy as Asterix.
Ah!
It's the same voice actor for both the French and the English version.
There you go, there you go. So we didn't have much difference, Sandro. There you go.
I quite like that character. He's got a lot of depth.
Yep. does he?
No.
And then they head off. And the competition is, if they can complete all 12 tasks, they get to take over Rome. If they fail even one of the tasks, then Rome takes them all as slaves.
That's right.
So there's high stakes.
And so, yeah, we get all of the tasks. Task number one, you got to beat the Olympian Asbestos in a race.
Yeah.
I'm kind of teaching kids the wrong lesson there, because we got Asterix acting like the hare.
Yeah.
In the hare and the turtle.
Mm-hmm.
That thing. You're Asterix acting like the hare, yet he wins.
I think, Sandro, that's actually a good life lesson, because it's like life isn't always fair, right?
Maybe. Yeah, yeah.
The tortoise and the hare teaches you not to be a cocky little bitch, but this story tells you to remember that life's not fair, and sometimes, even if you turn into a giant rocket going as fast as possible, you still gotta look out for the trees.
Still gotta look out for the trees. He also cheats. He just has poison. Asterix just has poison. I feel like, obviously, the Romans don't know about the potion. The potion, not poison. Obviously, the Romans don't know about the potion, but...
Yeah.
You know, if... And I get that Asterix is pretty... He's a pretty cocky guy.
Yeah.
So he's always having the potion whenever there's a mild inconvenience. But I feel like, you know, they should have been honorable and not had any potion for this whole... all the tasks.
Interesting. That is a good point. In the Netflix version, it starts out... One of their starting gags is that there's some Romans and Asterix tries to beat them up without the potion.
Mm.
And he gets his shit beaten in so that he So that he takes the potion and then he beats the shit out of the Romans.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting point that you bring up. But yeah. No, well, there's a lot at stake here, Sandro. They can't just be like, oh, yeah, we're going to make this more honorable, you know. They've got to... If they fail one of these tasks, they all become slaves. So
that's
I feel
true.
Like this is a justified use of potion.
I mean, for sure. Again, I just think it's teaching kids the wrong lesson. You know, it's teaching kids that they can have a G Fuel or a Prime and they can do anything.
I want to teach my kids to do drugs, to beat people who don't do drugs because they're squares.
Yep.
Fuck them. But yeah, he beats the guy in the race. The guy in the race runs into a tree.
Yes.
And he goes from like a regular nose to a giant bulbous nose because he crashes into his nose.
That's right.
And then Obelix is like, oh, his nose is a lot better now, which is great.
A true classic Asterix joke. Task number two. Javelins with versus the Persian.
Yeah.
Racist point number... No, that's the second racist point in the movie. We had the Japanese one, and now we've got the Persian one.
Yes.
Quickly followed by the third one, where he throws his javelin...
What's racist about the Persian? What's racist about the Persian?
The design. The way he's drawn.
Possibly.
It's that. It's the music as well was very... The music was very, oh, we're doing this.
It is very stereotypical, which isn't great.
But yeah, the Persian throws a javelin so far, or is it Obelix who does that? One of them.
The Persian throws it, and it goes from Rome to America.
Oh, yes.
And it lands next to some Native Americans, and... Because it's a thrown spear in the ground, this was a that is a thing that was a challenge.
It is a thing. This is a thing. But also, yikes.
Yes. Because then they have this Native American, like, stereotype thing where it's like, oh, we're going to war, this sort of thing, and then, yeah.
Going to war, they're all doing that noise that they do in westerns, and the way that they're drawn is yikers.
It's funny, because this is the part that I remember from the comic the most, is then Obelix picks up a spear, you know, a javelin, and he throws it, and it orbits the Earth.
Yes.
Which, even as a child, I was like, what the fuck? This is great.
Which is great. But yeah, they win that one. That's that sketch done. The next sketch is, the German. The German uses Obelix's strength against him. And then Asterix, like, butters up to him and tries to get him to teach him how to do the trick.
Yeah, after he tricks the German into teaching him how to beat him.
That's right. It was a very Bugs Bunny sort of...
Yeah.
Sort
You're
of
right.
...bit there.
It's a very Bugs Bunny sort of gag.
Yeah.
I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Me too.
I think the German guy was just really polite and just a really cool guy. And then the German guy realizes at the end that he's been teaching Asterix how to beat him, and then he's like, wait, I've lost. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Which was great.
After that is the Isle of Pleasure. I remember this one from, I think this was when I started going, I've seen this before. I have
right,
definitely
yeah,
seen
yeah,
this
yeah,
before.
Because yeah.
I remember the song, I remember how fucking long this bit is for no reason.
Yeah.
And I remember...
Well, that's the idea, right? Is it supposed to entice them to stay there forever, right?
And I remember that they just keeps, like, reusing the same animation over and over again, because... But yeah, they're on this island filled with women.
Oh my lord. An Isle of Pleasure.
Isle of Pleasure. But the spell is broken when the lads are like, oh, they're vegetarian. There's no actual meat here, no wild boar for us to eat. We gotta leave.
Yeah, Obelix and his hungry belly, he's like, Isle of Pleasure, I'll have some boar, please. And they're like, what? We don't have any boar here. We have some nectar and stuff. And he's like, nectar? I don't want to eat your nectar.
No.
I don't care if it's for the gods. I want some wild boar.
That's right.
In my version, I don't know if that was in the French version, then the women are like, oh, you want us to cook for you?
Oh, that was not in the French version, no.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, get the fuck out of here.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's funny.
It is interesting how, and this is in all of the comics as well, Obelix is the one who has love interests. Asterix, never. Never, ever. Aside from Asterix's true love interest, which is Obelix. But Obelix does not return these feelings.
Oh,
and therefore
no.
They are merely just good pals.
No! Sajo, you can't make this an LGBT icon.
I can
movie.
And I will.
Damn it. Not again.
There are only, like, 3 women in the village, so statistically...
Yeah. In the Netflix version, Asterix goes after the Chinese princess.
Oh.
And Obelix goes after the pretty woman in the village. So they both have love interests in that one.
They changed it for the modern times.
Yeah.
That was task number 4. Task number 5. They got to enter an Egyptian temple.
Ooh.
And look into the hypnotic gaze of Iris.
Ooh. So we see the first couple of people go into it. One gets convinced they're a cat. The other convinces they're a bird. And the guy who gets hypnotized into a bird literally flies away.
Yes.
Which is quite funny.
Yes.
But then Asterix goes in and he doesn't understand how hypnotism works. So he's just like questioning the guy the whole time, talking with him. And the guy who's trying to hypnotize him is getting distracted.
Yes.
And so he says, repeat after me. I am a wild boar. I am a wild boar. And so Asterix goes, you are a wild boar. You are a wild boar. And he's like, yes, I am a wild boar. What? And so he Uno reverse cards the hypnotist guy.
That's right. Which is pretty funny. I liked that. Again, though, the Egyptian is drawn in a pretty stereotypical, I will say that instead of racist way, but
I think it's, yeah, you're right. It's very stereotypical. There's a lot of stereotypes.
Task number 6. You've got to eat a meal made by many configs.
Luckily, after all this fighting and task doing, Obelix has worked up an appetite.
Yes, and many meals come out. It's not really, they're not joke meals.
Well, they are joke meals, but it gets more jokey as they go along, right? It starts off with like 12 pheasants, 12 roasted pheasants.
Yes.
And then it's like an entire Holstein, and he comes out with two. But you can't separate them. You've got to have two Holsteins. A camel. And then, like, I think the last dish was an entire elephant.
Yes, it was.
Mine was elephant with olives.
Elephant with olives. I liked the one where he brings out, like, some beef. And then, yeah, after that is, like, veal. Because to separate the family just wouldn't be right.
That's it.
Yeah, that was the line in particular that you were mentioning. Yeah, which is good.
I liked that one in the comic books more because you see the like massive pile of food.
Yeah, I agree.
And like just like the bones left over from all the food when Obelix is done with it.
Yes, and he thinks that it was only the starters.
Yeah. Eventually, the chef runs out of food and he gets very sad. So he runs off because he's run out of food, and Obelix is like, "Where's that chef run off to? I've only had my starters."
Exactly. Trial number 7, Cave of the Beast. We never see the beast.
No.
But the sound design was pretty cool. At some random point, as they walk through the cave, they randomly end up in a New York subway for like a second.
Yeah. I think this cave goes through time and space.
Yes.
Yeah, it's funny. I liked when they entered the cave, the like mouth of the cave like collapses in, so they're like trapped and it's like dun dun dun.
I liked the skeletons as well. They sounded very Undertale. The bones making noises and stuff like that was pretty fun.
Yeah, true, very true. And of course, Asterix and Obelix, they don't show any fear.
No.
Because they only fear one thing, and that's the sky falling on their heads.
Aliens.
And potentially aliens. I don't know. I don't think I've read that comic.
But now they are in Rome, and task number 8, they need to get a permit.
Oh, the permit one.
It's the gears of bureaucracy is task number 8.
I'm going to say it. I think task number 8 is not only the most realistic, but the most terrifying. And actually, I probably couldn't have gone through this.
Yeah, task number 8 is, I agree. It's a fun one, though. I think it's my favorite sketch.
Yeah, I think this gag is one of the most clever ones they have, for sure.
And the soundtrack is all, like, wild, crazy jazz, so you can never predict what's going on, and, it's pretty fun as they walk around a building that is very poorly designed. Like, you gotta go up to one level to get down to another, as they try and find a certain permit. Now, Zach, this particular sequence is actually in a video game that we both know pretty well.
Oh, is it? And what, pray tell, is this video game?
The video game is The Witcher 3.
The Witcher 3?
In the DLC, Blood and Wine, Geralt has to get Permit A38 from the office.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And it's the same, it's just this section of the
it's
game.
It's just this section?
It's just, it's entirely...
Does it make you go to, like, different places to get...
I think
like other things
I
it directs you around.
So. I haven't played it myself, but I'm pretty certain it's just a recreation of this whole bit in Asterix, except you're Geralt.
That's very funny.
Maybe it's like a hidden quest. I'm not entirely sure, but yeah, it's very funny. So that is a little bit of a reference for you. But I quite liked this sequence. I liked how this is the only scene where women are really allowed to speak, and what are those women doing? They're bloody gossiping.
Women be gossiping.
They be gossiping and drinking tea and knitting. That's what they be doing.
But yeah, they first go up to the desk. They ask for the permit. They get directed to a door that doesn't exist. So they go in another door, and that directs them to the sixth floor to consult the floor plan. And then once they got the floor plan, they find the correct door to go to. So they go to that one, but then it turns out they'd be misdirected because they actually need to go to the door two. And so they go back to find out where the door two is, and they go to the door two, but the good door two has the woman gossiping. So the woman gossiping don't want to talk to them, but then they talk to them, and then they're told that they actually need to go to door six before they can go to door two because they first need a permit for the permit.
Yeah.
And then they have a montage of them running around because of bureaucracy bullshit. And then they get so fed up that they start, like, screaming at the desk, and then the prefect comes over and is like, hey, what's going on here? I'm the manager here. What are you doing? And they're like, oh, we just need this form. And he's like, oh, we'll go up to this floor, this thing. And so they end up with, like, a pile of forms, and we see Obelix starts to go mad. He starts to go crazy. I think we do see some other people who have gone mad as well. They do, like, a conga line, but they're pretending to be a train.
Yeah, yeah. They're all running around outside the building and stuff.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah. Everyone's going insane. So Asterix, the clever wee thing he is, he comes up with a plan. So he asks the bureaucratic people. I think he asked one of the women.
Mm.
He's like, can I actually get form A37 or something, right?
That's right. Well, yeah, he tries to make, like, he basically uses the system against them so every person in the building goes mad themselves.
Yeah, he makes up a fake form that he asked for, which they don't know about because obviously he made it up. But because of the bureaucracy of the system, none of them can confirm or deny this form's existence.
That's right.
So they start running around trying to figure out what this form is that they've never heard of.
It's pretty great.
And eventually they all go a little crazy, and Asterix just asks the manager for the file, the form, and he just gives it to him.
I quite liked this whole scene. It was pretty fun. It's a classic joke. We've seen it in many things before, but it was pretty good.
Yeah, this one was pretty good.
Quest number 9 is the Last Crusade. They've got to cross a canyon by walking over an invisible rope. And the animation for this sequence was pretty impressive because you've got the physics of Asterix and Obelix walking on a rope. So they're kind of bouncing up and down. Except you don't see the rope.
Yeah, the animation is really good. It's literally just like, there is an invisible rope, but we can't see it, and so the animators have just animated them bouncing up and down on this rope without a rope there. And it looks really good.
And I'm pretty sure this was hand-drawn as well, for the most part.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like,
this is very Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, like, classic hand-drawn animation, which is really good-looking, by the way.
It's the only Asterix movie to be hand-drawn frame by frame. The only one.
Oh, really?
I think all the others might have been... I'll have to check what the animation style for the earlier ones is then. But yeah, this is the only one, which I thought is really cool.
My theory in this scene is they actually did draw it with a line.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
And then they took out... They had that, like, on a separate page. And so they took out the line every time they did the frame. And it looks really good.
Yeah, well, there is a lot of fancy trickery in this. We didn't mention it, but in the Cave of the Beasts, we see, like, almost, like, 3D images of the ghosts' faces. They're moving at a higher frame rate than the rest of it, so they look really smooth. There's heaps of...
There's some cool techniques.
There is some cool techniques. How do they end up crossing the Last Crusade rope bridge?
Well, so they're, like, bouncing around on this invisible rope, and then Asterix falls into the croc-infested river, but he just takes some swig of potion and then beats up every croc in the river and launches them up onto the invisible rope, and then just climbs up to the other side. And so then they look back and they see every crocodile from the river precariously balanced on this invisible rope.
That's right. And I think that's quite a racist depiction of crocodiles, because they would never do that. They would never do that. Number 10 is they climb a mountain to solve a riddle of an old man, except the riddle is just an infomercial.
Which was so funny, because I wasn't expecting it. I laughed really hard at this. This was really funny.
Yeah, I was not expecting that joke either. So it was particularly great.
They climb the mountain, And they meet this old man.
Yeah.
He's on a throne in the middle of a windy storm on top of the mountain. And he's like, are you fools here to trial the riddle?
And they're like, yes, yes, we are. Yes, we are.
So be it. Come. And he like blindfolds Asterix and puts him, now, tell me, which of these sheets has been cleaned with, what was it? The like... Something of the gods.
Olympus detergent of the gods or something.
Olympus detergent of the gods. And he's like, oh, it was this one because this one's softer. And he's like, yes, yes it is. And you too can have the softest, you know, thing.
So good.
Musical. Yeah, I was like, what? What is going on? It's really funny. And then it cuts to the Olympus gods all up in the clouds, but the clouds are really crowded. And they're like, yes, that Olympian stuff's really good.
It's really good.
Do we want Asterix and Obelix to be gods? There's not much room up here, you know.
I remember task 11 pretty well as well, which was they need to spend the night on a haunted plane. And all the spirits rise. It's a legion of ghosts. That's pretty cool, because Asterix is like, no, Obelix is like fighting them, but he can't land any hits because they're ghosts, obviously. That was really well done. But then Asterix wakes up and is like, people are trying to sleep, fucking get out of here.
Yeah, no, this is great, because the ghosts are like, oh, we are so spooky, you can never defeat us, we're going to fear you to death. And Asterix is like, what the fuck is this noise about? I'm trying to fucking sleep, you fuck. And the guy's like, whoa, whoa, no, wait, you misunderstand, we're dead, you know, you understand. I don't care if you're dead, people are trying to fucking sleep here. I've got to go to Rome tomorrow, I've got all these things to do, so if you don't shut the and so the ghost is like, whoa, okay, all right, we'll let you sleep.
That was great, I enjoyed that. And
which
then,
is very funny.
And it was very Return of the King, deleted scene, obviously, with the Ghost Legion.
True.
In fact, I think Peter Jackson was directly inspired by this for the visuals.
By Asterix and Obelix? I'd agree.
And then the final task 12 is the entire village has to fight in the Colosseum.
Yeah! So, Julius Caesar goes and, like, captures, quotation marks, the Gauls.
Yep.
As the Gauls just show up, because meanwhile, while Asterix and Obelix have been doing the tasks, the village has been preparing to own Rome, because they're like, oh yeah, we're going to win this.
I mean, obviously.
And so Vital Statistics, the chieftain, is now like dressing up in a toga, so he's ready for Rome. And the whole village comes into Rome, where they're immediately arrested by Julius Caesar and put into... the dungeon.
Yes, the dungeon.
They all drink the potion, and they're ready to fight. But then they start fighting amongst themselves, because they're like, oh, I'm going to smash more Romans. Leave them to me. I'll do it. And it's like, no, you've had all the fun already, Obelix. We've been laying about at the village. We need to have some fun, you know? You can't have all the fun, Obelix. And he's like, I've been busting my ass to try and get these shit. Yeah, fuck you. Nah, fuck you. And then they start fighting each other.
They start fighting each other, but then that leads to them accidentally winning the fight by fighting each other.
Yeah.
And then they actually then start to fight, and this scene goes on forever. As they beat up all of the Romans. And it's pretty good. It's pretty fun.
The where they're like arguing in the middle of the battlefield, and they're like accidentally backhanding Roman gladiators and stuff.
It's a classic.
Classic stuff, yeah. Because they're fighting about who gets to fight more gladiators.
That's right.
While accidentally fighting gladiators. Classic.
And in the trailer for the live action one that you're watching, that I saw, they do that fight in that movie.
Yeah, there you go.
Sort of thing. Yeah, classic. True classic. I don't get why Asterix is so tall in that movie. Why is he so tall? Make him short.
He is actually shorter than he looks in the trailers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's weird. Half the time he looks like properly short, they do it, but like other times he's like, because the actor's actually taller.
Yeah.
Right? So they do some shots where his like legs are quite short and other things. But
right,
yeah,
okay.
Anyway, yeah.
Anyway, Julius Caesar is like, you are gods, rule Rome.
Yep. Julius Caesar surrenders after they complete all the tasks.
That's right. And then the Gauls, they own Rome forever. They let Julius Caesar retire. And we end with a banquet where Obelisk is like, are we going to keep ruling Rome? What's going on here? And Asterix, and Asterix is like, this is a cartoon. So
yeah, this is
none of this matters.
in my one, he said it was a movie. And so, yeah, anything's possible. Which is a great ending. It's like, it could be canon.
Who knows? And then Obelisk, he teleports himself to the Island of Pleasure, and and that's the end of the movie.
Oh, yeah, that's right, that's right. He's like, a movie? We can do anything. And he, like, vanishes, and he pops into the Isle of Pleasure.
That's right. And that's the whole movie.
I liked that Julius Caesar got to retire. He went to retire with his Cleopatra.
I like that too. I like how Julius Caesar was depicted in the Asterix comics. He's kind of like a Thrawn.
The real Thrawn of the Asterix and Obelix world.
He is. But yes, a pretty good movie. I think this movie did a good job because like Asterix and, well, no, not really so much with Obelix. I think he is an interesting character. When they go into his backstory, that's some of the best Asterix comics.
Yeah.
Is ones that focus on his backstory. But Asterix isn't the most interesting character, so it makes sense that if you're going to make it a movie with him, just kind of have him just beat up a bunch of people and go through a bunch of trials. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I like this one a lot. This was a really fun movie, and I'd be willing to watch more stuff of it.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you walk through an art museum, what happens?
You see some interesting things, you see some not so interesting things, and if you're like me at all, you're probably a little bit sleepy.
Well, grab a cafecito and listen up. It's Art Slice, a palatable serving of art history.
I'm Russell Shoemaker.
I'm Stephanie Duenas. We are not your daddy's art history podcast. We are both artists, so we look at art history through that perspective. We cover the artists you know and those that have been ignored for so many different reasons.
We look at the context of the time, we compare it to today.
We don't dumb anything down, but, and this is a big but,
hey-o,
we like to have a good time, okay? Nos gusta to goof around, all right? We have hungry pantry mons that might startle you. It's a long story.
We feed them art materials. Art is just a visual language, so in order for us to interpret what we think it's saying, we hijack the work.
Right. How do you like that for an art heist?
Exactly. And ultimately, we decide if it belongs in our Art Slice Museum on top of the Art Slice Hilltop.
So if this all sounds good to you, join us on Art Slice, a palatable serving of art history.
So there we go. That is the 12 tasks of Asterix. But now it's time for the 12 tasks of us as we remake the movie.
Whoa! Are we going to do a live action recast?
I don't know. I guess. Maybe.
Or are we just going to do voice actors for cartoon characters?
Because
obviously when we remake this, we need to make it a little less racist.
Oh, obviously.
Just a little.
Just a touch.
Keep some of the racism.
Yeah, keep about 50% in there, I reckon.
Why?
I haven't read any of the recent Asterix comics.
No, neither.
So I'm not sure if they kick, because there was one published last year, like they're still coming out. I don't know.
Oh, really? Oh, there you go.
I don't know if they keep the racism or if they've slightly
probably not.
Done less. Probably not. I don't know.
I would say they probably got rid of a lot of the racist stereotypes, Sandro.
It seems like a lot of the Asterix ones that have come out, they went to Atlantis?
Probably.
There's some weird ones that have come out recently, but Anyway, I think, do we make it an animated movie? I guess we do.
I like animated. That's fun. I don't know if we've done voice actors for...
We did an animated Lassie, I think.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
I can't quite remember if we've done animated stuff before.
Yeah.
But let's come up with the cast for an animated Asterix movie then?
The first voice actor I thought of was Jack Black, right?
Ooh.
Because he's iconic, but I don't know who he would play. I was thinking Obelix at first, but I don't know if he would, if Obelix is quite right for him.
Yeah, I don't think Obelix is right.
And then I thought Asterix, but I don't envision Asterix as Jack Black, you know what I mean?
I don't either.
Yeah, maybe he could be like the chieftain or, I don't know. I think Jack Black's a pretty good voice actor, so he could probably play any role.
Well, my thoughts for Obelix was the guy who plays Bender in Futurama. John DiMaggio.
Yeah, I'm down for that. I think he would be good. Yeah.
That's a different take on Obelix, but I think it would work.
Seth MacFarlane
as Dogmatix. Every now and then it randomly cuts to what the fuck is the kid's name from Family Guy? Brian?
Stewie?
He does the Stewie voice for Dogmatix.
No, I hate that. Throughout. I hate that. No. I think Seth MacFarlane as like you know, like the fishmonger guy, right?
Yeah.
Like unhygienics. Who else do we want?
We could have the helper guy.
Yeah, you need the helper dude with the list. For me, he was very calm. The English voice actor was like, "All right, and so now you've got to go to your next task." Was he like that in the French version? He was the same guy after all.
Yeah, he was like that in the French version as well.
So you need a very mellow voice.
I think my pick for Caius Tiddlius is Justin Roiland, and he's like, you got tasks.
Oh, I hate that.
I'm a sexual predator. It's me, Rick. It's me.
Oh no, I hate that. I'd rather Seth Green.
Gotta go into the. Oh, Seth Green. That's a good one.
Yeah. Is Mark Hamill still working?
Yeah, Mark Hamill's still doing stuff.
Because Mark Hamill is great. I think he could do a great Asterix.
As Asterix, I was gonna say is Julius Caesar.
Or Julius Caesar. Yeah. I genuinely think Mark Hamill could probably do anyone. Julius Caesar's a good pick, though.
Yeah. Chris Parnell as Caius would be pretty good. He usually...
Yeah.
He's the dad in Rick and Morty. He's an archer as well. He always plays very, like, boring guys.
I mean, yeah. That works for the guy making the list, right?
Yeah.
I like that.
I think that's kind of funny. So we just need an Asterix.
Yeah, who's our main lead? It's the most important character.
This is
hard. We did play with Jack Black for a little bit, but...
I think Jack Black's a better... He's a better chieftain. Or, no, Jack Black is the potion guy, because then he can be all dramatic.
Get a fix? Yeah.
Because then he can be like, here's your thing.
Steve Carell.
As Asterix?
Yep. Unless you've got better ideas, I'm spitballing.
He could do it.
Yeah.
Adam Sandler.
Tim Allen.
Jim Carrey.
Oh, Jim Carrey. He did retire though, didn't he?
I think he's still, well, he's in the Sonic movies.
No, but like the Sonic movie was his last movie.
Oh, okay. Maybe he has retired.
Like officially his last movie. We could have, you know, this is... Now, hear me out, Sandra. This is actually not real. So
that's
we could
true.
Have actors that...
We could do whatever we want.
Well, Ron Perlman.
that's pretty funny.
Yeah. Boom.
It's hot. Michael Cera as Asterix.
Michael Cera.
Yeah.
It's a tricky one. We'd need to hear them out. You know, we could...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Steve Carell would be a good Obelix as well.
Oh, that's true.
He'd be good as both of them, honestly.
Could we do that? Could we have the same actor playing two different roles?
I like that idea.
That's very funny.
That's really funny. Yeah, we can do that. John DiMaggio, get out of here. Steve Carell is playing both Asterix and Obelix.
Hell yeah, let's do it.
Who's a good director? Because if it's Steve Carell, then I guess we're probably going to go like Despicable Me style animation then.
Well, I have a different plan.
Ooh.
I would like Joel Crawford, who did Puss in Boots, The Last Wish.
Puss in Boots, The Last... He also did The Croods 2.
Which is everyone's favorite Croods movie.
That's my favorite Croods movie.
Absolutely.
I agree with this. I agree. And I think Joel Crawford should direct this movie.
Very good.
My other option was going to be Steven Spielberg, because he did the Tintin film.
That would also work. Hey, we could have them both directing this one. How's that sound? Do some writing credit on it, maybe.
Well, there we go. That's our Tintin remake, with Steve Carell playing Asterix, Steve Carell playing Obelix, Jack Black is Getafix, Mark Hamill's Julius Caesar, and then Chris Parnell is an annoying sidekick guy who follows them around.
Yeah.
And Justin Roiland shows up as the Beast. I'm the Beast! It's me! I'm annoying!
And immediately gets eaten by Obelix.
That's right. And then he's like, I'm the real predator around here. That's what Obelix says.
I'm the real predator around here.
That's not true, though, because...
Fear me!
Fucking hell. That's the whole episode. Thanks so much for listening!
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening. You can check out our Patreon.
What?
At oldiebuttergoody.patreon.com.
That's not. That's so wrong. Patreon.com/oldiebuttergoodypod. When is... I think that's out this week.
What?
On Wednesday, our review of Madam Web.
Ah, Madam Web. The real Morbius of our generation.
That's correct. Some would say, me would say, it is what Morbius should have been.
Oh, bold. Very bold.
Because everyone thought the Morbius was so bad it's good.
Mm.
I thought it was just a movie.
Mm.
But Madam Web, maybe.
Well, you're gonna have to go to the Patreon to find out.
Patreon.com/oldiebuttergoodypod, and you can get ad-free and early episodes too. Zach, you can go to YouTube and watch us there and leave a review. Leave a review saying how you like that Asterix is racist, actually. Say that in your review.
Whoa.
That tends to happen sometimes when we do episodes. People defend the racism.
True.
You can leave reviews on Spotify or Apple. That is what you can do. Links are in the episode description. Now, I think I'm picking the next movie.
Yeah, you gotta pick the next movie. And there's a few options.
From 1977.
You've got Saturday Night Fever.
Ooh.
It's like a disco sort of thing. Tony spends his Saturdays at a disco where his stylish moves raise his popularity amongst the patrons. But his life outside of disco is not easy when he gets attracted to some random chick.
Ooh, hell yeah. That'd be fun. We've got Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Ooh. Yeah, I would like to see that one. That's a bit fun. Ooh, what about... you might have heard this one, Sandra. It's a little indie movie. It's called Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. Have you heard of that one? It's like a sci-fi sort of thing.
I don't really want to watch three other movies to watch a thing, though. Episode 4?
That's true. You gotta watch the... Yeah. Princess Leia gets abducted by the insidious Darth Vader. Luke Skywalker then teams up with a Jedi Knight, a pilot, and two droids.
This sounds derivative of Dune. This is a ripoff, Zach.
Actually, this does look like a ripoff of Dune.
Like a ripoff of Hidden Fortress and Dune. I don't want to watch this.
Yeah, that sounds pretty garbage.
We're never... In fact, I'm putting my foot down. We're never doing a Star Wars movie here on the podcast. Because they all sound derivative of Hidden Fortress and Dune.
That's fair. What about... Airport 77.
No. What about...
Fair.
The airport movies are all the same. And
I don't have
that much interest in watching them.
I mean, it's a thing, you know. It's got to deal with terrorists and stuff, you know.
I'm very tempted to pick Exorcist 2, The Heretic.
Because
it's the girl from The Exorcist goes to a psych hospital.
Ooh.
And apparently it is the... one of the worst movies. It makes no sense. I've always wanted to watch it.
That's very funny.
But I don't think I'm going to pick it. I could also go Suspiria, which is on the opposite end. Another horror film that doesn't make any sense, but it's great.
Ooh.
I love the original Suspiria. It's fantastic. But no, I'm not going to pick that. I'm still having a look.
Hey, speaking about an animated movie featuring Mark Hamill as a voice actor.
What?
We have Wizards.
Mark Hamill's in that?
Yes, he is.
Oh.
He is part of the cast, apparently. It's a avatar. A wizard must defeat his evil twin brother, Black Wolf, in order to save the world from fascist mutants.
What the fuck is this?
Have you never seen Wizards?
I've never seen this. What is
Wizards
this?
Is wild. Wizards is wild. I like Wizards a lot.
This looks very random.
Yeah. It is very random. It's a good movie though. I think I've seen this one when I was young.
Right.
I don't remember it super well, but it's a fun one.
But no, Zach, I'm going to pick a movie that I've got backstory with.
Oh, that you've got backstory with. Okay.
I used to own the novel that this book was based off.
The novel? Oh, this sounds like a really hoity-toity sort of movie. A high-class movie, indeed.
Nope, it's pure trash, Zach. It's pure trash. I used to have the novel of this. I got it from a random market when I was, like, 6. And I think I owned it until I was 12, where I sold it, having never read the book, because I couldn't get through the first couple pages, but I owned the book because on the front cover it said, from the producers of Star Wars.
Pog.
But I thought that meant that this book was written by George Lucas. That's why I had the book.
Yeah, of course.
It's because I thought George Lucas had written it, but no.
So what is this hoity-toity high thing, you know, bought it in Marketplace? Surely this must be one of the finest pieces of literature ever written.
It's about a journey across America. In a car. America is a radioactive wasteland with giant bats and butterflies attacking people.
Whoa!
It's called Damnation Alley.
Damnation Alley?
Damnation Alley. It's Mad Max, but it's in America.
Whoa! Oh my god, look at that vehicle! Whoa! That car looks sick as hell!
It's been a long time coming, me watching this movie. I can't wait. Alright.
The pictures of this do not flatter it.
I think they changed the plot completely. It doesn't look like there's any giant radioactive butterflies or anything in this movie, actually.
Oh, okay. Anyway. We'll see.
Maybe I'll read the book. Who knows? That would be good, actually, to finally read the book after so many years of never reading it.
That would be funny.
That would be good. Anyway.
I'm not going to pressure you into reading that book, though, because I don't know. I don't know about that, Chief.
We'll do that next week. But, Zach, before then, I know you're tired.
It's
I've
true.
Made you do 7 episodes in a row without a break.
Oh, man, I am so tired. I could use a nap right about now. Maybe some wild boar, you know? Oh, that would be yummy.
I've always wanted to eat the wild boar that Asterix and Obelix eat.
Me too, actually.
I'm like, oh, that looks yummy.
But I feel like, Zach, you're so tired that you're not going to be able to sleep. That's how tired you are. You're so tired that you're not going to be able to go to sleep.
I've had that before when Melbourne goes to 37 degrees and then the lowest point at night is 26.
That's right.
Which is insane.
And so what I'm going to do is, you know, I'm your friend. I've got a little cocktail here.
Ooh.
It's a sleepy girl cocktail. It's a sleepy cocktail.
What?
It's got melatonin, it's got magnesium, it's got all this shit in it, it's gonna make you sleepy.
Those are big words that I recognize, that sounds scientific and realistic. Give me that, Getafix, give me some of that.
That's what I'm referencing, here's your magic potion to fall asleep.
Ooh, is it gonna give me superpowers? Heck yeah.
It's just gonna make you really sleepy. Just joking, it was full of caffeine, you're awake, let's see the next episode, let's go!
Oh my god, I can see colors!